true. Everything goes back to communication.
And I do think if you can incorporate some humor, because we're all a little ridiculous. We all make unexpected body noises. Everybody does, and things like that. To be able to laugh about it rather than be embarrassed about it.
Yeah, we make it so sterile, like it has to be so perfect and beautiful like we see in movies. But sometimes things are funny. It's messy. It's smelly.
Right.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. Yes, it's true. It's all happening. I'm talking with my own mother today about sex. A ton of you have asked me how I got into the sex education business in the first place. Now you get to hear from the person who raised me. First, my mom and I talk about her sexual journey coming up in a time when open communication around sex wasn't normalized and female pleasure wasn't valued. She also helps me answer your questions on sex and relationships, like how to give a partner feedback when they're doing something that turned you off, what to do if menopause is tanking your sex drive, how to negotiate with your partner when you've got different definitions of cheating, and how to approach a partner who does not want to spice up your sex life, but you're dying for some variety. What to do about it? Intentions with Emily. For each episode, join me in setting an intention for the show. I do it. I encourage you to do the same. My intention is to give you permission for your sexual preferences and self-knowledge to evolve over time, just like they did for my mom. By the end of the show, I think you'll gain a lot of perspective on what it means to grow as a sexual person and why who you are right now sexually may be different than who you are in 10 years. And that's totally okay. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new articles, The Future of Sex Tech and Sexiest Morning Routine Ever, are up at sexwithemily.com. Check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's all at Sex with Emily for more sex tips and advice. And if you want to ask me questions, leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. Just include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. And it's cool to change your name or choose to remain anonymous. And before we get into today's episode, I'm coming out with a book. It is called Smart Sex: How to Boost Your Sex IQ and Own Your Pleasure. And if you order today, Friday, April 28th, from Barnes & Noble, you can get 25% off on all pre-orders, including print, ebook, and audio. So if you would do that, I'd be so grateful for you to pre-order the book. If you know you're going to get it anyway, if you want a book to change your life, just go to sexwithemily.com, go to the drop-down menu, select new book. It's easy from there. And there's also a link in the show notes. Oh, you'll also automatically get my new and approved yes, no, maybe list and be entered to win the Smart Sex Prize Pack when you submit your proof of pre-order at the link in our show notes. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a cultural icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. Do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a Magic Wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the Magic Wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades, and I've been obsessed with my Magic Wand. I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the Magic Wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the Magic Wand Rechargeable, tiny with the Magic Wand Mini or Micro. Micro is really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Summer is definitely the sexiest season. I mean, think about it. The days are longer, the nights are hotter, and your sex life is too. And if you're looking to turn up the heat, how about a little help from our friends at Promescent? Summer is all about things hot and steamy, so I highly recommend you add something extra and tap into Permessin's lineup of pleasure-enhancing products. I've been singing their praises for years, since they started, and for good reason. Because first up, we have the legendary Delay Spray. This is the MVP of lasting longer and keeping those eager penile nerves in check. You just do a quick spray, and you're set to outlast even the longest days of summer, ensuring the party doesn't end before you want it to, so you can have the mind-blowing climax you're now so very well equipped to reach, thanks to Promessin. It just helps you last longer without all the worry. And for women, Promessin's warming arousal gel is a fun pre-sex ritual. You just rub it into your vulva a few minutes before and you'll feel it start to tingle, warming up every nerve ending. So you'll feel that much more pleasure everywhere before you even get going. So it's kind of like the sure thing. So make sure this summer is the sexiest one yet. Check out promessence.com/Emily and get 15% off at checkout. You get free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee, discreet shipping, all the things. Promessence is your ticket to a more guaranteed good time. That's promessence.com/Emily. promessence.com/Emily for your exclusive discount. Check it out. So, Mom, so we've been here. You were on the podcast like when I first started 18 years ago.
Yes.
I think you were on it within the first year. I was doing the podcast, but I was also doing a nighttime radio show in San Francisco, like a live radio show, and you came in.
Right. I remember that.
And we had a conversation. There were callers calling into the show, I remember. It was a call. It was like, would you ever make a sex tape? And people were calling in saying if they had made a sex tape or not. And I was like, I don't know if I would. People are going to find it. And you let me know, Mom, something.
Well, I let you know that Ed and I, Ed being my husband, had made a sex tape.
Yeah. Shocking.
Like 36 years ago, 37 years ago.
Do you know where it is?
Oh, I think it's been burned. I think it's been burned. Yeah. I mean, we were young.
Whose idea was it? How old were you?
You know what? Remember when I was friends with Gail?
Yeah.
And she and her boyfriend had done it, and they invited us over, and he would shoot the sex tape.
Wait, Mom, you didn't tell me someone else shot your sex tape? Your friend's boyfriend shot the sex tape, so they watched you.
It was a bubble bath.
Oh, my God. They shot you having sex in the bubble bath. That's a good friend.
Well, yeah.
That's kind of hot.
Yeah. You know, we had probably, you know, gotten a little high because we were like child of the 60s.
No, Mom, what's your take on weed and sex? Because I know that you've been a fan of it, right? How does it affect you?
What?
Weed or smoking before sex?
Well, you know, it was something I grew up with. When I was 22, it was just becoming popular. Hair, the musical Hair was big. And it was like you were either part of the crowd that did or you were part of the crowd that didn't. And you would look at people and you'd say, oh, they get high. They don't get high. That was sort of became your criteria of who you wanted to party with on a Saturday night.
How could you tell the people that would and wouldn't?
You could. Well, you know, you weren't always right. So my best friend, who was always seemed like the straightest person in the world, but she had been a smoker. And I said, I'm having trouble. I don't know how to inhale. And I found out she'd been getting high for a year and a half that her brother had turned her on to it. I said, oh my God, I didn't know you'd been doing it.
So she taught you how.
And it made you feel like you were cooler and, you know, more of the in crowd. Not that you really were necessarily, but it was very popular. Saturday night parties.
Yeah, Saturday night kind of thing. Yeah. Because I remember I was reflecting on this because we did a 420 episode. You know what 420 is? It's the weed. It's the holiday. The weed holiday.
Oh, okay.
So I was thinking about one time I came home from college. I think it was sophomore year, junior year. And I came home and I said to you, I just had this conversation with my girlfriends about sex and about orgasms because I realized that I didn't even know what an orgasm was. And then I realized I was like, sex is kind of disappointing. Like, I like cuddling with my boyfriend, but I don't like the sex part. And apparently everyone's having orgasms and I haven't had one. And what do I do? And you looked at me and I don't remember really having talked to you about sex before. And you said, you know what, Emily, you should just smoke a joint. And honestly, I wasn't a smoker then. I think I had a different relationship with weed then. And it took me years to realize that
I can't believe
a little bit of
I
marijuana.
Said could, that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But what you're saying is it
loosens you up.
Loosens you up. Kind of lowers your inhibitions, gets you out of your head and into your body. Don't you feel like you can feel your body more?
I mean, I'm glad I did it. You know what? So now at my age, because I'm I love having those memories. I'm not embarrassed about them. They're like fun. It's part of the history. So it's not like you're, hurting somebody.
No.
I was the man I loved.
Exactly.
So it was a good
story. I love
the
story about your sex tape. I wish we could find it somewhere.
Oh, no, it's been burned.
Growing up, do you remember what you knew about sex?
I didn't know much about anything. I was really naive. And, in my day, people didn't sit around and talk about it. I mean, you were supposed to be a virgin, even though a lot of people weren't, but it was.
Were you?
No. But it was a different world. First of all, it was before birth control. So the fear of getting pregnant was huge. Women didn't sit around and talk about their sex lives so much.
They don't do it as much now either. You weren't naive. There just wasn't a lot of information out there.
But women are much more open now. I mean, my friends and I, as the years went on, became much more open. But we weren't when we were young.
Right.
We were really naive. I was really a kind of
Did
a
you
goody-goody.
Enjoy sex?
Yeah. But your dad was my first partner. That was just, and I really, we didn't, I mean, you talk about communication and all of that. We didn't know about communication.
No, people don't. But did you look for, was it like you guys were together for what, 13 years, 12 15. Years? 15 years.
Yeah. I did look. I liked it.
Yeah. It was pleasurable. Uh-huh. You didn't have any problems or pain or anything?
No.
That's good. That's good. You enjoyed it?
Yeah.
Cool. Do you remember your first sexual memory?
Well.
Or feeling turned on or feeling.
Yeah, but I was a late bloomer. Like I met your dad, I was 19. And, I had, you made out and everything, but never did anything. I mean, I just didn't. In those days, you worried about your reputation, people talking about you. Although in reality, looking back, the people who were labeled sluts probably had more fun. But, I was so worried about what people would think of me and all of that.
There was a lot of judgment around female sexuality.
There was a lot of judgment. And I just didn't know that much. And fear of getting pregnant.
That was big. What about pleasure for you? Was it always pleasurable every time? Do you have orgasms?
So we're really going to go there?
Yeah.
So, I never really had a problem.
Really?
I never really had a problem.
It's always most times, every time?
Yeah, until I got older. But, and then age enters into how you feel. But when I was younger, I enjoyed it.
That's great, Mom. That's real. That's 20% of the population that has it during intercourse, penetration.
Yeah.
That was not hereditary. That was not a gene that I received from you. Good chat, Mom.
Thanks.
Mom, do you think that sex gets better as you age?
Well, I think it plateaus. I think in your 30s, 40s, 50s, before menopause, it's great. And then things change after menopause. And I even see it with my friends because my girlfriends and I were all, sexy in our little bikinis and everybody loves sex. But then you go through menopause and it really changes things. And maybe it's getting better, but there are, issues when a woman isn't, after menopause with dryness and pain and your libido goes down and it changes.
Mm-hmm. What did you do about it then?
Not enough. I tried and there's certain things you can do, but there's still not enough information out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there really needs to be more and more information about women and menopause.
They're starting to have more of it right now. There is more information about it, about menopause. I remember you telling me that you took some things like estrogen.
Yeah.
But that was later.
You try different things and it's trial and error and it's okay. And it's more the diminishing libido.
So what would you do then, knowing that sex is still important? How would you still make sure that sex would happen?
You have to plan for it. Like we were talking last night about setting an intent for making dinner. It's like you have to set an intent like having a date night, or it's harder to be spontaneous.
Yeah.
When you're young, you're more spontaneous. And then that goes away if you have kids and all that. You have to really plan for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, to make sure it happens. Because you were saying after menopause, it was harder. And I think that that is true. But yeah, there is a lot more you can do now with hormones and lube and talking about it and normalizing it. And so,
you know, things have changed so much. Like going back, not even talking about sex, but like when your brother was born and I had postpartum depression, not a lot bad. It wasn't over a few weeks. All I would do is cry. Don't tell him because he'll say that's why he's the way he is.
We won't tell him.
No, I'm kidding. But nobody talked about it. It didn't have a label. So you walked around thinking you were nuts. It's like, why is this that I'm always crying? Like, I'm nuts. And, you know, it wasn't nuts. It was all hormonal. And it's the same thing with menopause. It's like these are natural functions that need to be talked about and publicized and made part of the conversation.
Yeah. Women had to silently suffer through so many things, feeling it was only them. So a lot of it is hormones, and it's so common.
And, you know, the more it's talked about, the more it's on television, it's like so healthy, because for women to bond over that and to not feel like they're the only one.
Yeah. It's happening, Mom.
So this is really a funny joke. Change the subject. I had some girlfriends visiting me in Florida, and my girlfriend, who is like 73, and we always laugh how our libidos have been diminished. So somebody was talking about shoes. They said, oh, I'm wearing fuck me shoes. And I said, I'm wearing don't fuck me shoes. So I said, that's what happens.
That's what happens, right? But that's true. I guess that. What age do you think that started out with your friends? Like 60s, they started feeling less sexual?
No, 70s.
70, that's what I feel 70. Like. I feel like 50s and 60s, you guys
it's
are
still good. Yeah. But like 70.
Yeah. Oh, Mom, that's good. That's very funny.
Funny? I just thought that was like.
So what are some of your secrets, Mom? How do you think, I mean, you and Ed have been together for almost 40 years.
We have.
Which is such a feat. It's incredible. So what would be your secrets for keeping the relationship strong, not just sexually, but in other ways?
Well, I think relationships change. We always laugh because when I started going with Ed, he lived in Chicago and I lived in Detroit. So, you know, it was like you go through that period of where you're tearing each other's clothes off. And then you go through the period where he'd come in, he'd want a sandwich.
And then you tear each other's clothes off.
And then you tear up. And then did the mail come? Let's go to a movie. You know, things change through the years. But your relationship deepens in other ways, in trust and in values and family. And now at our age, because Ed being 7 years older than I am, I have a depth of appreciation for him and for his health. Because around us, people are getting sick and dying. And we've been so fortunate. And we still play and we bike and we hike and we have a good time together. And I don't take a day of that for granted. When I was younger, I never thought about it. It was just our life. Mm-hmm. But now I'm filled with gratitude.
Mm-hmm. You're like probably the healthiest, most active 80-plus-year-old couple I know.
Well, we're lucky. You know what? We're really lucky.
It's partially luck. But what are some of the other things that you've done to stay connected and healthy?
Well, you know, a lot of it is values and giving each other space. Like understanding, not trying to change each other, accept and appreciate. And we love each other. And physical touching is still yummy. We still love to cuddle and hold hands and always touch. That doesn't go away.
Yeah.
The chemistry is still there. It's just a different chemistry.
And you guys plan. I feel like you guys do what is really important for a lot of couples is you. Because what a lot of couples crave in long-term relationships is spontaneity and variety and novelty. And I feel like you are really good at creating fun new things for you guys to do all the time.
We do.
So even going to the opera or going to an art walk, I think that's just a great message to send to people too, that it doesn't just be the bedroom that you're mixing up, but even mixing up your routine is going to have an impact on your ability to feel connected, aroused with the partner.
Well, it's all part of the same thing. It is. I mean, I love planning adventures. And my girlfriend who was visiting us in January said, I'm starting to get a sense of the way you and Ed work together. Like you get up in the morning and look at the newspaper and look at all the things that are happening. And I'll say, oh, look at, there's a review or a theater group, or he'll say there's a movie or a music group, and we get tickets and we go. And we have that in common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving. We both do it.
I think that's really healthy. A lot of people just sit around and watch TV. Like when you ask couples a lot, like where, what's their bonding moments and when do they feel closest or what do they do for fun? People are like, oh, we watch our TV shows, which you guys also do.
We do. We have our shows.
More than anyone I know, I think every time I talk to you, you're like going to events and doing things that are just so unique to where you live. And it's an effort. Because I think anyone could Google your area, like Google wherever you live and say, like, things happening in my city today, no matter if you have 100 people in your town or a million, and there's always something happening.
Well,
I feel like you go to those things.
We do go to those things.
Like, whatever it is, you're like, we're in. We're going to go.
Right. We never say no.
You have a different food. You walk down a different street. You experience a different part of town all the time.
I love that.
And I think that's part of you guys feeling healthy and vibrant.
You know what? I think one of the things that we always had in common going back to day one was energy. And I think I've talked to you about that. I think energy, having the same energy, is so important. Because your dad was a great guy, Emily, but he laid on the couch.
Yeah,
you know,
he was tired.
He was a good guy, but he laid on the couch. And while I ran around the block.
He wasn't ready to do stuff. He wasn't as fun.
He wasn't. And so, you know.
I got you.
But there were women who would be happy with that.
Yeah.
It was a mismatch of energy. More than anything else, I think.
So when someone's picking a potential long-term partner, what are the things you think they need to look for?
Well, I think, do you have fun? And are you like not trying to change each other? Can you accept each other?
Don't date on potential. Like,
you know,
where are they right now?
You know, if you meet somebody in your 20, you can think that they're going to change. But if you meet somebody, I met Ed, I was 42, and he was turning 50. What you see is what you get. You know, and we have both changed through the years. Living together, we've changed. But our basic essence is still the same. And, you know, for me, I've got to have somebody, like, I'll say, oh, today, do you have any plans? No. Okay, let's have an adventure. And he said, okay, good. What do you want to do? I love that. That makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Like, good. You're always getting on me too. You're like, what's going on in LA? You got to get out there and do fun things. So you inspire me to do that too.
Yeah.
I probably work too much. You always were very good at the work-life balance, Mom. I feel like you work and play equal degrees.
Well, by the time I really started working at a career, really working hard, you were almost a teenager. So it made it a little easier.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I was home for dinner. You know, and the other day when I got divorced, they didn't have joint custody. There was no such thing.
Right.
So I had full-time custody.
That was a lot, Mom.
It was a lot. But that was the way it was.
When you look at your friends that have been together and stayed together, Mom, what have you learned? Like, are there any traits that just draw to you? Like, this is what successful couples do? Or is there anything in common?
All my friends who have been married like 55 years and whatever, they've all gone through stuff. They have all gone through really hard stuff. Some of them have had affairs. They've gotten to the brink of divorce. I mean, nobody has just like skated through, but they have been willing to change, whether it's through therapy or whatever, and really look at their issues and work on it and decide for the sake of everything they were going to make it work. And once they got beyond that, those couples are really happy now. They're really happy and in love. I've, you know, dear friends, I've watched them go through it. And I think how lucky they are that they were able to make it work.
Yeah, I like that you normalize that. That couples that go through periods maybe where they just are like, we can't do this. Sometimes when the kids are really young or there's like a death or something kind of happens financially or they've just been together, maybe couples in their 40s. I feel this happens sometimes and they've been together since their 20s or 30s.
Or sometimes you marry I had a dear friend whose father died when she was very young. So when she met her husband, she was 16, and when she met her husband, he was like a father figure to her. But when she was in her 30s, she no longer needed a father figure. But he was very strong and kind of, you know, domineering and needed to change, and they had to, but they both made it happen.
They both want to work on it, right?
They both really worked on it, and they're like one of the happiest couples I know.
Got to be willing to do the work.
You got to be willing to do.
So which couples don't work? The ones that failed, what happened?
Well, the couples that I know that all got divorced was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it has to do with one of the people changing. You know,
and the other one doesn't.
Like with
change.
Your dad and I, we were happy for a long time. And then, you know, I wanted to work. You were in school full time and I wanted to get a job. And he really could not deal with me becoming an individual. That was before Oprah. And maybe if we had figured out communication and we could have talked it through, maybe, but I doubt it. I think it happens earlier. You know,
you think if couples get to a certain point, like their 50s or 60s, they're going to kind of.
Most. I mean, yeah. I'm sure there's exceptions to the rule and, you know, but the people that I know a lot of people been married 55 years.
That's good. So Mom, when do you feel the most confident in your relationship? Or do you always feel confident? I think you always.
With
feel
Ed?
Yeah.
I've always felt confident.
Always? You never doubted it? Had any doubts?
Not after the first few years. First few years, I kept thinking, is this really who I am with? But then it just felt right. You know, and I love the way he is. I have great appreciation because he loves my family so much. And I love the way he is with my family. And it's his family. And I love that. And I'm so glad that, like, you and your brother and grandchildren get to experience that. That makes me very happy.
Good Mom. How important do you think that sex is in a relationship? Looking back on this, like what role did it
really
play?
Really important.
Why?
Communication and fun and pleasing each other. And what I think is good now is now people communicate so much more. Like you've talked about that. I think that's so healthy.
Yeah. Well, you made it healthy for me. I was able to ask you about sex. You didn't ever like shame me because a lot of people have shame around it. They don't talk about it at all. Still, Mom, people still don't feel comfortable talking about sex, as you know. I'm sure they think you know that.
But at least they can call you and.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you think has changed in the world of sex throughout your lifetime besides the conversation? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Well, I think there's so much information on there and social media. I mean, some of it's good, some of it's bad. Of course. I have to separate. I don't like the idea that kids are experimenting at such a young age. And maybe that's my prudish self. There's something about it that seems so not ready. And I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I kind of feel that way. But, you know, when I was growing up, you played spin the bottle when you were 12 years old.
Yeah. Now.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
But I, you know, but on the other hand, I guess talking about it like, you know, like you're making a sandwich, maybe that's the healthy way to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
Right.
I just sort of accept it and don't really think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah. Because there's been some advancements. So you know that I've always talked to you about lube. I've been a huge fan of lube. How long have I been talking to you about lube? For a long
Forever.
Time. But you always like lube too, but then yeah. I brought you some good lubes.
Right.
So now there's lubes that are made just for women by women. So up until recently, a lot of lubes were made by like drugstore brands, but now there's really good ones. And there's one that I'm the chief sexologist of called Playground, which I think I brought you some last
you
time
did.
I was in Michigan, right? And what I love about it, it's like a facial for your vagina because they use these great ingredients and serums. They have like, you know, like, do you ever use face lotion that has hyaluronic acid?
Yes.
So it has hyaluronic acid, vitamin E, and ashwagandha, which I put hyaluronic acid on my face and I take ashwagandha as a supplement and now it's in a lube. So it's pretty awesome, Playground. Did you like it? Did you try it? You saw the bottles. I brought them from Michigan.
Yes.
Cool.
Like, you've changed lives. You know, you've got some guy sitting in a car in Iowa, no offense, Iowa, just using that as an example, where they're from a home where they can't talk about it and maybe he doesn't know anything, but he can call you and ask these hard questions mm-hmm. or maybe young married people can call you. And I mean, that's a resource. I would have loved to have had that at my age. We used to get so excited. We used to read Playboy magazine, you know.
Playboy is fun. What did you like about Playboy? The pictures or the article?
Well, I loved some of the explicit questions and answers. And who was
Q&As were fun. Like the bedroom confessions.
Yeah,
called.
Yeah. That was always fun to read.
Yeah. Like, do you ever have any fantasies, Mom? Does your brain, do you think about fantasies? Or talk
Not
about
anymore. I did when
you?
I was young. Yeah.
Did you talk about them? Did you share them? Do you remember them?
No, I'm not going to share them.
You don't have to share them, but did you? Did you talk about them? That's good. That's healthy.
Yes.
What do you think about size? Do you think size matters?
Yes.
You do? Okay. Okay. Tell me more.
Well, for me, it mattered.
Okay. Do you have a situation where...
Yes.
What'd you do? What did you do? What did you do?
It didn't last.
No. What do you think matters more, girth or length?
Wow, these are really hard questions. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Girth.
True. But also, most of the time, we're all okay with your size. Stay tuned because after the break, my mom and I are answering your questions together about cheating, jealousy, and keeping the spark alive. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. All right, Mom, now I want you to help me answer some questions.
Okay.
Okay, this is from Mike. He's 40 in Florida. Hi, Dr. Emily. My name is Mike. I'm 40 years old. I live in Florida. I've been with my wife for over 10 years. I was wondering if you could help me with bringing up the negatives. You're always talking about how to share our likes, desires, and how to feel the best. But what about the stuff we don't like? I'm struggling in my relationship with things that turn me off, shut me down, and push me away. I don't want to put all the problems onto my partner, but I can't help the things that I'm attracted to turn me off or don't enjoy. You've called them accelerators and brakes before. I want to share my accelerators with my wife, he means the things that turn him on, and make her aware of the brakes, the things that turn him off, but just seem to hurt her feelings. She feels controlled by my requests and accelerators. It leads to our relationship rifts rather than intimacy building and understanding, especially if what you don't like is something they do like. He wasn't clear, but what can I think is like maybe something she's wearing or something like maybe she cut her hair in a certain way or maybe like maybe she has pubic hair and doesn't want her pubic hair. I'm not sure what it is. He didn't tell us. But how would you share with your partner something like that?
Well, what comes to mind is that you got to put a positive spin on it. Like, have you ever tried putting your hair up? Instead of focusing on and don't saying what you don't like, offering it as an addition. Like, maybe we could try this or maybe we could try that. You're at your most vulnerable with your partner, and if it's a sexual thing, saying something they don't like that you're doing.
People get into fight or flight when you talk to them about sex. They're so worried that it's, if you talk about it, that you know, you're a terrible
person. It's painful.
It's really painful. So that's a good tactic. I call it the compliment sandwich, where I'm like, give them something that you really like. Like, I really noticed how beautiful, let's say it is about him. Maybe he wants his wife to wear his hair up more. We'll go with that. So maybe they went out a few years ago or a few months ago and she had her hair up. Maybe there's a photo. He says, you know, I really love the way you looked in this photo. You seemed happy that night too. You got all dressed up. And that would be the first part of it when you give a
compliment.
Compliment. And then you might say, and I think that when we go out again, it's really hot for me to see you in different scenarios. It's really fun to see your hair up too. because I'm so used to seeing you in one way and we change things up in relationships, it can be a lot harder just for variety. Like that's something that's really great for arousal too, to see our partners in a different way. That's why like wearing a wig is such a hot tip for people.
Right.
Because you see your partner differently. And then you would close it with the like, so I think that if we, you know, both kind of worked on mixing up the way we look in the world, that we continue to keep our attraction hot and feel good about each other.
Well, you could. I mean, I think that's a great way to do it. Another way you could do it is you could sort of make it a game. Like, let's tell each other something that we think would be fun that's different. You tell me and I tell you.
I like that.
So it's sort of like a sharing, like giving permission. She might say something to him that he doesn't like. But like make it like a game.
Mm-hmm. That's fun. I like that. I like the bucket list of like writing down three things you want to try or three things that would be hot and exchanging the lists. That's fun.
Yeah.
And maybe also here you could ask her, I hope, Mike, you would ask her too if there's anything that she's into or anything that she would be willing, any requests that she has for you. Because the reason why this probably feels like such a big deal for him is because they might not be, although Mike does say here it is, he's like, I go to therapy, I read your recommended books, I listen to your podcasts. And so, you know, he is doing the work. So I love that. And it's the kind of thing where you just have more of these conversations.
I think we're most sensitive, most vulnerable in bed, even with the person you love the most. Like to hear something critical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like, ouch.
It is hard. And that's why you just got to couch it with like, I think I always tell people, we got to couch it with like, we both want the same things. We want to be connected. We want to be great lovers to each other. So this is not, and sometimes you have to do a lot of reassuring. You have to say, I love you. I love us. Here's all the things I love about us. This is just something I think that we could use to have more pleasure because things do get boring and stale after a while. And our partner does things sometimes that aren't as hot. So we have to be able to talk about these things because you know what happens? We don't talk about them. Resentments build up over time.
Right.
And
absolutely.
It's not good.
Absolutely.
Also, I have something on my site called the Yes, No, Maybe list, which I should show it to you and see if you know a lot of things. But there's like 80 sex acts on it, Mom. And this is one of my favorite tips for couples to do. It has everything on it, like kissing and dirty talk and spanking and making a sex tape and using sex toys. And they each take the quiz and it says you can say if it's a yes, if it's a no, or it's a maybe. And then you each fill it out and then you get to compare lists like, oh, I didn't know we both wanted to be tied up or I didn't know we both wanted this or that or this is a no or this is a maybe.
Well, it really goes back to communication.
Everything does. It's true. Everything goes back to communication.
And I do think if you can incorporate some humor, because we're all a little ridiculous. We all make unexpected body noises. Everybody does and things like that. To be able to laugh about it rather than be embarrassed about it.
Yeah, we make it so sterile, like it has to be so perfect and beautiful like we see in movies. But sometimes things are funny. It's messy. It's smelly.
Right.
I think, Mike, you guys have been together for over 10 years. I think you'd be patient too. Because what happens is, what I found is when couples do start to talk about it, like they're talking about the weather, like, you know, sunny with a chance of orgasms or, you know, pass the salt. And how about that anal sex we had last night? That was really great. Like you just got to talk about it. And the more you do that, it doesn't become so shocking. So I think we have so much fear that keeps us from moving to the next, to the next level of the conversation. Everything's hard at first.
Right.
It's a new skill set, but it's worth it. Okay, let's get into Lauren. This is from Lauren 30 in New York. Hey, Dr. Emily, my boyfriend and I have different views on what it means to cheat. He says that cheating is only an exchange of bodily fluids. I think there are many things that fall under the umbrella of cheating. Sexting, sending nudes, grinding on somebody in a club, taking somebody on a date, verbally telling somebody you want to have sex with them. The list goes on. He agrees that these things are bad, but doesn't consider them to be cheating. While he says he wouldn't do these things to me that would hurt me, is it really possible to have a successful relationship when you don't see eye to eye on this fundamental difference about what constitutes cheating?
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, it's semantics. You know, I mean, they've narrowed it down to a word and a definition of the word. And it's really, it's much bigger than that. Why is she suspicious that he's going to start cheating? And is that why she's not taking him at his word? There's a lot more to it than the question.
Sounds like she doesn't feel safe.
Exactly.
Usually when we start worrying about our partner cheating, it can be because we had experience in the past with somebody cheating, or maybe our parents, you know, our father was cheating on our mom or vice versa. That's one thing. But also people sometimes start to do things that are suspect. You're like, why are you hiding your phone? Or why are you,
exactly,
you know, not coming home when you said you were going to come home? Or you catch them in these little things. And then we start to think we're insane. And sometimes we get gaslit, right? Our partner says it's not true. But no, I think we have to trust our guts more. Because even if you think someone's cheating and it might be your issues, well, then it's such a great opportunity for you to go back into therapy and like look at what it's really about. That's part of it. But a lot of times if you're getting evidence or things are coming up, the fact that she has all these list of things here, I would think that maybe he's...
There's a lot more to it than the question.
I think it's she doesn't feel safe in the relationship. And I think that the important thing to get beneath what she really means by cheating, for her, it's very important to feel safe and to feel like she has a partner she can trust. And there are certain people, like I've dated people who made me feel very unsafe and I did not last with them very long. It's like a requirement for me to be with somebody who... I just wouldn't doubt it. Like, I can't live in this world of like,
no.
Does he mean what he says? The fact that you think it's okay to send nudes to somebody. Because in a way, it's all, I mean, emotional cheating is a real thing too.
Of course.
You're like, you're my person that we're going forth together. And now these things could be happening that I thought you just were saving exclusively for me. So I think it's less about the definition of cheating here. And it's more about how she wants to feel with her boyfriend. And how he wants to make her feel. And I think when we can tell our partners that things that they're doing make us feel unsafe, like for example, there's a lot of things that come out about social media. People are like, oh, my partner keeps liking all these person's photos on Instagram and yeah, I don't I've feel safe that. And all yeah. these things. And I think that we're so afraid of feeling needy sometimes, or we're feeling like we are being difficult and therefore our partner's going to leave us if we tell them we don't want them liking people's photos or doing these other things. We're seeing if our partner can show up for us and support us where we need it. I think we just can say to them, does it make me feel like I can be in this relationship in a healthy way when these things are happening? It brings up these issues for me. Is it more worthwhile for you to keep liking these photos, or is it more worthwhile for you to, you know, I'd love if you could kind of hear what I'm saying right. and really hear this. I think that you want to be a supportive part of me. Would you be open to not doing some of these behaviors? And if they say no, well, then that's another, it's giving you more information to work with. Right? Things you can talk about, maybe go to therapy. But if you keep accusing your partner of something and they're really not doing anything, it's usually because either we're doing something, we grew up in a home where there maybe was some infidelity.
It's your own
or past.
Your own.
So either way, you got to go to, yeah, you got to get some help for that. I can't think of any scenario where therapy isn't going to help somebody in life and definitely in relationships. I feel like we go get help in so many areas of our life, like something's wrong with our business, we go see a business coach or, you know, we get help.
I mean, I see, like, there's this one couple that I know. You don't know them, but they've been married like 57 years. He's really a disgusting guy. And they've been married forever, and they've never had therapy. And she's really, you know, politically, everything, they're like on opposite courses. But, you know, when you get to a certain age and you've never had therapy or worked on yourself, and she had this horrible childhood, and you know, and you could really see it. You could really see how they function with their kids, with their family. It really shows. Mm-hmm. If you don't do the work, if you don't really
How would you describe that, doing the work with that? Because people who have been in therapy, I always say it's like getting a second opinion on your life.
People can go through therapy and it may not do any good at all, because you have to be willing to look at yourself and be willing to go through the pain and change. You might say, oh, you know, I went through, you know, 2 years of therapy and blah, blah, blah. But if you haven't really looked at yourself and done the work, because a therapist could only do what you tell them. If you don't tell them the truth or you're lying to them as well as yourself, they can't read your mind. Then, you know.
Yeah, you have to be willing to do that.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
This is from John, 42 in California. Hi, Emily. My 42-year-old man, married for 15 years. We have 2 children. Our sex life became less frequent and less exciting after having kids and pursuing our careers. Over the last year, though, I've decided that I don't want to settle for mediocre sex. And like most things in life, I want excitement and passion. Unfortunately, my wife does not share the same interest in spicing things
up. Uh-oh.
Yeah. She's willing to have sex, but she's not excited or interested in ever trying anything beyond our normal routine. I've tried explaining this over and over. I think we just need to add some spice to our otherwise healthy relationship, but the feeling is one-sided. I am bored of the routine, but when we discuss this, she says that there's nothing wrong with our routine. It feels like a hopeless struggle to get her interested and open her mind to new things. Do you have thoughts or ideas how I might pick her interest and desire to open up and explore the world beyond the mundane? Your advice and insight is greatly appreciated.
I love reading like advice columns, and a lot of times it's in reverse too, you know, where the guy doesn't want it. And I think, you know, people, they look for somebody else.
You're saying that they might look for someone else if you don't do the work with your partner.
Yeah.
Why do you think people don't want to do the work, though? Why do you think people don't want to talk about sex or change it up?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, I don't have the answer for that. I mean,
I do.
Huh? You do. This is your, you answer it.
Well, I hear this and I think to myself, it's because his wife is probably so fearful that it's some, his request is something that she has so much shame about and she doesn't really know what he means, but he wants to mix it up and she's afraid it means like threesomes or she's going to have to go do something crazy that she doesn't want to do. And what he's really asking for is like connection. And maybe like
and
sex
spice.
In a hotel room or her wearing a piece of lingerie or using a sex toy. Like it's not our biggest fears usually. It's probably just something that's a little bit different because the same thing gets bored after a while. But since they probably, like many people, don't have a lot of experience talking about sex and talking about their lives, she's gone into this like, nope, I won't do it, and shutting him down. So I feel like if there's a way to get her to understand that that's not what you're talking about, and maybe you could get really, really clear, John, about what you would like to try. Like, again, I have a feeling that she's tripping to some place that's like it's some extreme thing that's probably not that. And if he could get clear on what it is and explain it to her, it'd be a lot better. Because a lot of times we think it's, you know, like he needs to have like a crazy threesome or something,
right.
But it's probably just a different position. Maybe they need vacation sex. Maybe they need to talk dirty. Maybe they need to watch porn together. And it doesn't mean that she's inadequate and not sexy and not lovable. So I think that the problem is that when we bring up sex a lot too, we go to this like, I'm unlovable, I'm not enough place. And so the more you could speak to that part of her that feels that way and she could hear it in a way that realizes like, okay, we are in this together. We both want to have great, hot sex. We want to stay together. We love each other.
I think people sometimes, they settle. Like she's got a job. She's got the kids. She's tired.
She's tired.
She doesn't want to take on one more thing. She's happy to fall into bed at night.
That happens a lot.
People are tired. You know, you get up, you've got to deal with the kids, get them off to school, fix their lunch, work all day, come home, dinner, do the dishes, and fall into bed. The last thing you want to do is put on a sexy lingerie. If I were just saying the fast is like to make a plan, like get a babysitter or, you know, have the get, you know, do something like make a date. You got to change the routine. We're all such creatures of habit, myself included. Every night I have my ice cream cone from Trader Joe's.
Yeah, I know. Every night. No, I know we are. And that's the problem with sex too, is that we become creatures in that way, but that's where it's not working for people.
Right.
In long-term relationships. So this is another one, like going to the gym, you'd probably much rather sit home and watch TV or
how do you
scroll
prioritize
TikTok.
It?
Just how do you how do you decide that sex is so important
some
in a relationship?
Sometimes it's the presentation.
It's how you say, yeah.
Like, let's have some fun Saturday night. Let's get a sitter and try something new.
Right. Not make it about the sex, but kind of back into the sex,
yeah.
So to speak.
Let's dress up or let's, you know, do a role play or...
Role play's fun.
You know.
Come up as like an alter ego or do something different.
You know, just make it like a one-time thing.
Because it is important.
Yeah.
So we got to figure out what works for us. There's a different thing that's going to work for everyone to get in the mood again. But I think it's a matter of realizing that it is important and you can't put it on the back burner. And the more you put, it's going to be harder and harder to get it off that back burner.
Well, he's going to start getting really resentful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like he already is. So again, maybe therapy too could help. Just, it's not saying you're going to therapy for life. It could be a few sessions. It could be you agree to go for 2 months, once a week with your partner. And you can even do it on Zoom now. So everyone's like, we don't have time, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's an hour of your day. It's an hour a week. And it's so worth it. So couples can learn the communication skills that helps them go to the breakthrough if they're stuck. Ready, Mom? I'm going to ask you the five questions. These are our quickie questions. Ready? They're quick. Answer the first thing that comes to your mind. Biggest turn on.
Attention.
Biggest turn off.
I would say somebody who's unattractive.
What makes good sex?
Communication and touching, trust.
Something you would tell your younger self about sex and relationships.
To be more confident and to talk more and get in touch with what I want.
What's the number one thing you wish everyone knew about sex?
To have fun and loosen up and think that we're all ridiculous sometimes and have the ability to laugh.
Love that. Thanks, Mom. Thanks for being here. Thank you for having me.
It was fun.
Having me. Thank you for birthing me and raising me so well. I'm so grateful for you, Mom.
Aww.
That's it for today's episode. See you on Tuesday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.